It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay. What the crap is going on outside?
Well, I mean, it was snowing pretty hard not that long ago. It seems to be kind of calming down.
It's been spring for many days now. Quite nice outside. Sometimes a little rainy. Not exactly short sleeve weather, but nice. You could go outside. Spring is happening. I was already starting to have my existential crises of all the things that I say. Once spring comes around, we'll do that. And I'm like, oh crap, I have to do it now. And it was like that when I took my wife to work this morning and came home.
Yep.
And then less than 2 hours later, it's a winter wonderland. What the crap is happening? I do not like it. You're seeing it too, though, right? It's not just...
No. Yep. Right. Oh, it's still coming down, but not in big...
Yeah, it's supposed to most of the day. And then tomorrow will be cold, so things won't happen. And then Saturday and Sunday, it'll happen again.
Well, you know, that's living in Iowa for you.
And it's nicer than we've had a lot of years. I was talking with my sister on the West Coast about her weather. And I said, your weather's kind of turning into ours. Except ours is also, theirs is getting worse, both their winters and their summers. And ours are kind of getting milder. And so I think we're all meeting in the middle here pretty soon. Because especially in the winter, they get a lot more crazy weather that seems very normal around here, but it's very abnormal for the Pacific Northwest. And we, despite everything that's been happening, we still have had quite a mild winter around here.
Pretty mild.
I don't want to jinx it. I love those. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that has special visual things just for the people who watch on YouTube and not the people who can only listen to audio. So if you're watching on YouTube right now, you are seeing this cool effect, and people who are just listening at home can't see anything. They are missing out on the full experience by this cool thing we did just now. See? Yeah. So that's just for you YouTubers. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 625.
And dangerously close to our 12-year anniversary.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Which the traditional gift for 12 years is online mystery in a box. So,
Well, then I'm taken care of. Now I have to figure out. Good.
You got 1 week to figure it out, mister. I don't know where else you're gonna. If you just get one from there, you're just gonna look like you copied me.
Maybe I can do this one this weekend and re-gift it, and then just in time.
Like, why are there all these crayon answers that have been crossed out? What's happening? And then one you rewrote over the top. Why is that one wrong? Is that what you're doing? Trying to.
Oh yeah, I could put a whole bunch of red herrings in there. Not, I mean, figurative. Not
what was literal. This bottle of Reed's Zero Sugar about? Why is this in here? I got that the other day.
Yeah, and you said you didn't realize there was stevia
in it. I had forgotten. Like, you had mentioned it had stevia in it. I had forgotten. It was really the last nail in the coffin, though. I just do not like stevia. I wish I did.
I mean, I don't know if I even notice it as terms of the flavor. I
absolutely do.
Huh. I don't know.
To be fair, I've made a career out of telling the different flavors of things. Whereas you.
Well, I mean, I've never liked diet sodas because of whatever. Like, if it's aspartame, don't like it. If it's saccharin, don't like it. I mean, it's just, there's no artificial sweetener.
It's pretty much really just aspartame now. They have lots of different brands, but it's basically aspartame and sugar alcohols, which were a real quick sort of fad that has not gone away, but we don't advertise it as much now.
Like xylitol and stuff like that.
I think that might actually be a sinus medication. Splenda, I think, was originally sugar alcohols.
Oh.
I don't know now. see, and Trisha doesn't like those either, which is why she doesn't drink diet stuff. I was raised on aspartame. It tastes very normal to me.
Hmm.
I used to have several rats attached to me and they all got brain tumors and died. But again, it's not the same. You can't translate that over. Science says what it says and not what it doesn't say. So just because the conjoined rats on my body all died from brain tumors does not mean it's going to happen to me. It wasn't even an official study. I mean, so much confirmation bias.
Correlation's not causation, so.
Yeah. You know, maybe it was just time for all my conjoined diet soda drinking rats. I had one under here. He lasted the longest.
I don't even want to know how they were conjoined. If they were drinking
different places, we were attached at various ways. My mother doesn't refer to me as a miracle child just because she was told that my father and I would not be able to have a baby and then she got pregnant. It's also because I am the only kid on record of being born with 7 rats attached to their body in non-cosmetic ways that lived. Sometimes they call me the boy who lived. They don't as much because SEO doesn't really... Somebody fucked that up for me, but yeah, lots of boys and girls with lots of rats attached to them. They don't tend to live.
Okay,
so in that way, aspartame kind of helped.
The FDA has approved it as a natural treatment
for a very specific situation. So far I'm the only one to take advantage.
But. This is so weird. This is very weird. It's very weird.
No, right? It's like funny, but I also feel like I need to go take another shower. It doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel good.
Something's just not right.
For those of you just joining us, we have a hat besides the one that is constantly welded to William's head, a different hat that is magic. In that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people write in that address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with stuff. And we read that stuff and talk about that stuff. Also, Jazz sent me a couple of emails that were not hat related. I think she sent them to you too. I haven't read them. I have not been doing super great this week, physically speaking.
Still, you've been having some issues for.
Yeah, believe me, I know. I don't know how much of this is getting into paranoia levels on my part, but I am starting to feel better. I am still sleeping a lot, and I have been avoiding being around other people besides my wife, just in case. But I've taken COVID tests and none of them come back positive. And most of the symptoms don't seem like COVID. It's much more head coldy. But
excuse me. You know,
that's why I don't hang out with you.
I don't know what's going on there. This game is still sitting next to me, taunting me while I'm doing.
Got a week left.
if this is the experience that I'm pretty sure it's going to be. I seriously might, like, you know, like I've been telling you, I need to, in the 3 week breaks, I need to not do things. And this might be something that I can do that keeps me away from the stuff I shouldn't do.
I think it's definitely possible. If not, I'll introduce you to porn. That also has a good chance of keeping you occupied for 3 weeks, not thinking about school. I speak from experience.
Right. But do you think it would keep me occupied? I mean, do you really think I'm going to be?
We just got to find the right thing. There's something you don't know you're into yet. And once we show you a video of it, that's all you're going to do. It's out there. You watch out. One of these days. It's probably one of those innocuous ones that you can technically watch on YouTube.
Not pornography, you mean? Not really porn.
But sort of. But fetish stuff. Like, Trish one time, I don't remember. I think she was doing something involving accessibility. And she was looking up things about amputees. And she accidentally stumbled into the part of the YouTube algorithm where people... watch amputees lotion up their stumps, basically. And she watched a couple and she's like, oh, this is a thing for somebody. Like, she's like, why does this video exist? Because they're not like instructional or anything. And finally she was like, oh. And that's the thing, like, if your porn's out there enough, nobody else can tell. That's got to be a pretty sweet gig, I would think.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, because human sexuality is such that just about anything can turn into a kink, anything at all.
Yeah.
I mean, some things are, you would think, would be statistically more likely than others. For example, the thing you're talking about, because there is something sensual about, a person, you know, putting lotion on any part of the body.
Yeah. And there's a whole school of a variety of sub fetishes involving taking care of / treating people with disabilities.
There you go. So
there's a few different ones attached to that, some of which are more problematic than others.
Right. But when you think about, you know, when you think about how, see, this human sexuality class I just took actually did a terrible job of addressing this. I was kind of talking to you a little bit about this. Did a terrible job addressing this. Like, we talked a lot about mammalian sex and sexuality, right? Like, a lot of the stuff we talked about that humans do is the same stuff that other mammals do. We didn't really break into what is human sexuality, which includes the fact that, you know, human sexuality is well, first of all, as a species, we're just like, we're omnivores. We're omnisexual as a species, right? You're going to find,
we'll stick anything in our mouth and anything in our.
I'm not saying every individual is. I'm saying, as a species, there's nothing about us that restricts us from really any kind of sexual activity. So we can sexualize anything, really. And we often do. Again, there's going to be a certain statistical probability that certain things will probably do that more than others. And when you think about it, when you discover a kink that someone has, and it might seem really strange or odd to you, but then you think about it and you go, oh, okay, I get, you know, I mean, that doesn't do it for me.
Myself, I can do things that I'm like, I get where this comes from. Yeah, I have these issues. I had these experiences, and now it's this. I've also got several that it doesn't bug me that much because I've learned to accept, but there's several that I'm just like, I'm into this and I have no idea why I am into this. And I'll try and think, okay, like, nothing.
Okay. But
yeah, I do not know why that trips my trigger, but it does.
But here's the thing about all of that, as someone who's studying to be a therapist and who's taking a class called human sexuality,
none of it matters. Only the mammalian stuff matters when it comes to therapy.
The thing
why
is,
let the rest come up.
Well, that's just what I was going to talk about, was how surely one of the, I mean,
damn it, Jeremy, I don't know why you're coming here. Chimpanzees don't have sex with lamps, so I don't know what your problem is. Just get over it.
I mean,
if it's good enough to not be their thing, why do you got to go slumming, Jeremy?
Some, some people are gonna
my whole practice.
Some people are gonna show up and say,
"You're ruining my percentages." I assume that's a thing, like in surgeons, when like a number of people
know.
Killed or whatever.
I don't
number
know.
Of patients cured. You're like, you're bringing down my stats. They're gonna bust me down to sergeant if I don't get my numbers up.
But the thing is, because of those realities about human sexuality, which was barely even talked about in this text at all, here's the thing. The text should have talked about these things because that's part of what human sexuality is. And it should have said, well, what happens when someone comes to you and their whole issue is, I have this thing and it's really bothering me that I have this a fetish or kink or whatever it is. And I think I'm weird and I think all this stuff. And to help them work it out so that they can feel okay, however they want to deal with it, right? Like if they want to stop or if they want to find some way where they can accept themselves and be okay, integrated into the person, whatever it is they need to do in relation to this thing, you as the therapist, you need to be able to do that for them. But we didn't talk about anything like that. We didn't talk about any kind of case like that. And here's another thing. there was one discussion about, so a couple just had a child recently. And as is sometimes typical for a woman who's just given birth, she wasn't as interested in sex as she had been before. You know, there's a little time period there where most women aren't as interested or whatever. But also at that same time, this guy wanted to start trying different things in the bedroom. And so we were supposed to talk about that. Now, keep in mind, the scenario did not suggest that he came up with this idea because nothing was happening after the birth. Like, you know, for example, what if he'd only thought of this doing new things in the bedroom thing because he thought that after the birth, they weren't as interested in each other anymore. And that's the whole reason he came up with this idea, not because he necessarily wants to do anything new in the bedroom, right? So maybe all he needs is for it to be explained to him, hey, this is a normal thing that happens for a particular time after childbirth, and you just wait and things might get back to normal. Or maybe it's not related at all. Maybe this new thing that he wants to do, he's wanted to do for a long time. Nothing in the scenario specified any of these things or what kinds of things they might be, or what do you do when a couple has one person who's like, I don't think I can have sex anymore unless we do this thing. And this person's like, there's no way I could get turned on doing this thing. That seems like a pretty complicated thing for a married couple to have to go through. How would you deal with that? Handle that? Nope. Didn't even talk about that. But that didn't even come up.
WWMD, what would mammals do?
See, you're joking about this, but I've been thinking about why this is, why this text only covered that. And I think the angle, I'm starting
your
to think.
Your teacher is secretly a bear.
I think they wanted you to think of everything that humans do or cope with sexually is like, they want you to think about it a certain way so that you, they're mostly focused on, because this came up over and over and over again in questions and stuff. And the reason the discussion question I mentioned to you just now didn't go into depth is because it was too busy focusing on what you as the counselor are thinking. Like, are you offended? Are you like, are you going to be offended by someone coming in saying that they are into bondage or whatever? And yes. So it was all about you not getting offended at whatever they were talking about. It wasn't about you understanding human sexuality and being able to say, help this person cope with it if they're having an issue. It was all about you not being too offended. And so I think one of the reasons why they focused on the animalistic aspects is I think they were trying to make everything seem animalistic so that you would just, that one way to cope with not being offended was to not really even to see this person, not to see this person's thing as human per se. You know, it's just a thing that
goats don't get offended, William. What's your problem? Goats, but just take it. If that's what you're into, goats are like, rah. It's fine.
But I mean, I think you can be human and you can think they're human and still not get offended. I mean, there's no reason to get offended at any of this stuff. But I think
that I can't wait till you're done and you can start teaching these classes. You're going to solve a lot of these problems.
I don't know what I'm going to solve. I just think.
Well, you better. You've been talking a big game. It's on the internet now. Gonna have to back that shit up.
I mean,
the odds of somebody hearing about it are, what is it, 6 in 8 billion?
Well, am I wrong? Do you think to think that they need to be?
I don't know. I didn't take your class.
I know.
Off the top of my head, I'd say maybe there are things that are important for you to learn as a therapist related to this topic, but we're not within what the professors determined the purview or the priorities of this particular class.
But it there's also not could another be, one.
Ever? There's no way for you to further. This is literally all the sexual education any therapist ever has.
No, this is the only one in the program. So
yeah,
it could easily be it could be like someone could go through this This is the same that anybody who gets any programs that are going to be the same, not just my programs like this. They're all like this because they're all approved by the same board. So for anyone who gets a master's degree in counseling, this might be the only class in human sexuality that they take. I mean, they could read other books and, you know, there's lots of other ways they could learn more things if they wanted to, or if they tried to or went out of the way to. But if all they ever do is just accept whatever they get in their master's program, this is it. This is all.
In terms of classwork, yes.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Maybe it doesn't come up as often. Maybe it's something that is handled in the practicum. Maybe it's a terrible class you're taking. And maybe it's a terrible class you're taking and you seem to be the only one in class who can see it.
No, I'm not the only one.
Okay. Well, in that case, if a bunch of people in your class agree with this perspective, odds are it's just a shitty system. In which case, your degree is not going to be worth the dot matrix paper it's printed on. I assume.
I don't know.
I assume just... they send you a PNG file and you have to.
But there's, I never really know, because I'm usually on one side of these things. Either I really don't know enough to be able to judge how it should be, or sometimes I actually do know some things, but I know too much, so to speak. Like, what's happening is perfectly appropriate for the level that it's being aimed at, and that's not me. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
I never seem to be like the exact place where I'm supposed to be for whatever they're doing to be just for me. Either it's too advanced for me or it's not advanced enough or something.
So let's assume you're right about all of this. Because again, I wasn't there or whatever. Is the concern that because these are the classes you took, you're going to be a bad therapist? Or is the concern that other people in your class who don't know better are going to be bad therapists? Is the concern that the therapy industry sucks and maybe you shouldn't be doing this as a career?
No, the concern is that I paid for something and I didn't get it.
I mean, that's definitely a concern. Depending on what you agree you pay for, you're getting good grades still. You're still going to get out of there.
Yeah.
So how are you not getting except is this that argument? Is this I didn't learn stuff that I feel I should have known, so I've left here not the therapist. You guys didn't make me the therapist I believed you would.
What I paid for was to get up to on the other side of this class. To know more about how to help a person who comes with certain types of concerns, to know more about that than I currently know.
And you don't think this course, you haven't learned anything like that in this course. That ain't great.
And I can't, every single one, I can say, wow, there was a lot of stuff in there that I didn't know. This is why I took this class, so I could learn this stuff. I'm glad I took it. I got what I paid for. I can say that about every single other class I've taken. Even if I didn't like the text very much or I didn't like the class very much, I can say, no, this class was exactly what it said it was going to be. It gave me exactly what I wanted, worth every penny. Just not this one. This is the first one in the whole time. I've been going, it's just 2 years now.
Any I've only recourse? Got...
You know, they ask for feedback, right?
Yeah, so that only helps other people, though. That doesn't help you.
Oh, no, nothing. There's nothing to help me.
You can't be like, I'd like to petition to get my money back for this class because it sucked.
No. I mean, I can, you know, I can learn whatever. I mean, you know.
Oh, and I assumed you would, yeah.
Yeah, I'll just go read some other book or whatever. I'll do other things. But I paid for this, you know, and to me, that's a big deal. That's a big deal. And you know, I'm not concerned that when I get on the job, I'm going to be like significantly less effective. Or if someone like this does come into my office, that I'll be such a terrible therapist that I'll harm them or something. That's not it. It's just, you know, these classes are expensive in terms of time and money. And I'm probably overly aware of it. I don't know, because of my age or because I'm going through something in my life right now. I don't know what it is. So it's been one of the great comforts in the fact that I'm putting in all this work, and sometimes I'm missing seeing people on the weekends because I'm doing work and I'm getting in debt and all this stuff. One of the great comforts has been when a class is over, I look back and I go, that was worth it. And this that just doesn't count in this class.
I am absolutely up for a heist or a scam in which we take from this university the equivalent value of time and money. If we want to do some leverage style shenanigans, I got your back.
I guess
I do. You're going to want a specific number, though. Figure out what your time is worth and how much this class costs, because we want to be fair about it. We are white hats in this instance.
I guess I do worry a little, because you and I talked about this too, I do worry a little that there might not be, because this textbook, you know, has many additions to it. And I think it's kind of well known as a textbook in the profession that lots of people use, not just counselors, but social workers and people who are getting masters in psychology.
What's love got to do with it?
But I guess I do wonder a little bit if the state of human behavioral science knowledge on human sexuality isn't a little lacking. And if that's true, how many people out there who have issues around, you know, sexuality are not getting served because, you know, when they go to get help.
I'm sorry, I could have told you. Yes, very much, and a lot. No, sexual identity is one of the least prepared things that mental health and physical health, for that matter, know how to deal with in our society.
And what do you think? What do you think?
They're still coming up with terms for people that have existed for centuries, but that didn't have terms before.
Is it just the old, like we just keep having to push through the old prudish stuff?
I think there's some of that. Sex is one of the things. There are many that our society has determined is private, and we still have a lot of judgment attached to it's technically bad. Not insignificant swaths of society at least maintain the outward appeal that it's naughty. It is not to be discussed in polite company, and it certainly isn't an academic discipline.
I don't know. It just seems like,
my think about it. Super liberal arts school had exactly one course on human sexuality, and it wasn't in the psych department, which was pretty big. It was in the social department. There was one class for one semester each year, and it filled up instantly. And it was a very interesting class, culturally speaking. In no way do I think it tied into anything that would necessarily be as useful in a therapy context. Like I said, and to be fair, our psychology department was much more neurobiological focused. Our psych was in the hard science group rather than social sciences and all that. But we had exactly one class, and it was a big deal that we had that.
Well, like, for one thing, I feel like it's not a generally understood or scientifically appreciated idea, the thing that I was saying before about how humans can sexualize really anything. I mean, when I say that, I'm not saying that because I read it in a textbook. I'm saying it because I've seen it happen, for one, and for two, it makes sense that that's so. Human beings.
I've sexualized three things in this room since we started recording.
It should be obvious to anyone that human beings are capable of that. And yet, if someone hears about someone sexualizing something, there even among so-called professionals, there's almost always some kind of judgment about it.
Yep.
Like, oh, that's weird. I mean, weird? It's not. I mean, it might be something you've never heard of before, but it's a human being. So this is something humans can do. So some humans gonna do it. So what's so surprising about it when it comes
and
down
just
to it?
The fear attached to it. I hate to bring this up as an example because I'm not the biggest fan of Dan Savage these days for a lot of his views, but there was a time when I would read his column and there was somebody who basically witnessed, I think it was their significant other. So it wasn't, this wasn't the issue. In the middle of the night, they heard their significant other was sitting on the couch and masturbating, and none of this bothered them. But while this was going on, the cat came by and walked on them, and with their free hand, they just pet the cat a couple times, and the cat went on. And the person was writing in being like, oh my God, is my significant other into bestiality? Like, what is that? And because they were so freaked, like sex was happening and then there was an animal, and Dan was like, no, cats do what the fuck cats want to do. He probably did it without thinking remotely about what was going on, or if he did, he realized that just petting it real quick would be the fastest way to get it to move on because it has no part in this. But trust me, in their mind there was no connection. But people are so scared of, like, sex is such a scary thing that sex in the proximity to something else, even conceptually, is scary.
Right, but do you think it's really
sex
that
when there's a cat in the room is bestiality?
Okay, but do you think it's really that much more scary? I mean, people are scared of a lot of things that people think, right? Yeah. I mean, you hear this, especially nowadays, it's like, well, this was caused because this person thought that kind of thing. Those thoughts are dangerous. I mean, you know, there's kind of a difference between what a person thinks.
Too ubiquitous.
Mm.
We all know everybody's thinking about sex all the time, especially the dudes all the time. And we all buy that. And so any hint, like sex has to be discreet. Sex has to be unrelated to anything else. This is sexy time. This is the time when you're allowed to be sexy. This is the private time with the people that you have agreed to have private sexy time with. And it is only here, and it involves nothing else in your life. Any other people, any other objects, any other aspect, food or hygiene at the same time? No.
Okay, so that makes me think of this.
Is must be quarantined.
Right. This makes me think of another thing. So this class, sometimes they'd have little scenarios or vignettes that you could read at the beginning of the online course room or whatever. And those were sometimes interesting in what they were presenting. But then nothing in the class addressed.
People are going to think this is a sex thing now. It's not, I promise. She just came by.
But this vignette would be presented and then we wouldn't talk about it. It wasn't part of the discussion. Okay. So one of them was, I don't
you
remember
find
for
your
sure.
Spouse over a body, bloody knife in their hand.
No, I think it had to do with your therapist and you're sexually attracted to your client, I think. Something like that. That's interesting. That's interesting. That's a thing that could happen. So, you know, let's talk about what we would do or what that means or how we would deal with it. Or would we talk to a supervisor about it or whatever? Nope. If that was just presented, just about every course room thing had something like that presented and made you think, oh, we're going to talk about this interesting thing. And then we did.
See, a lot of what you have described sounds like two things together. One, it sounds like the direction of this class was not at all meant to teach you how to be a therapist in situations that involve sex. It was entirely to provoke thoughts in you about all the myriad possible things that might happen.
I also think
whoever your professor was just was not particularly good at facilitating. Because if that is what you're doing, it relies very heavily on a facilitator.
Yeah, that's what I think too. Yeah.
It is absolutely within the purview of professors to be like, yeah, so there's a little blurb at the start of every chapter. I don't give a shit about it. I'm never going to talk about it. Like, that is well within. Two professors can be working from the same text, and that is absolutely within the realm of
differences in
their style.
Right. I mean, the text was.
I think you may be expecting something they weren't intending, but I also think they might be doing a bad job.
Well, like I said,
the text and the professor.
Shoot. You know, I was concerned about what you were just saying. Like, well, maybe this is just, you know, me. Part of the reason I talked to you about it is to check, well, what do you think? But also, fellow students.
I always think it's just you.
Fellow students. And no, they felt the exact same way that I did, that this wasn't what we thought this class was going to be. Because most of us were very excited about this class. It's like, we are really looking forward to
this. It may also be one of the newer classes offered in this program.
Oh, boy, I didn't even think of that.
Because like I said, it was a big unusual thing in the mid to late 90s when I got mine at my school. Which is not to say that it hasn't necessarily been around for years, but compared to other aspects in this sort of education.
Yeah, so it could still be, they could still be figuring out. Oh, I didn't even think of that.
Last I knew, there are still non-discredited academic works out there that reference Kinsey. And not only was Kinsey back in the 60s, it has been broken open as one of the worst methodologies of all time. Like, literally everything Kinsey discovered doesn't benefit remotely from rigor.
Yeah, that was mentioned in the text. But see, the text
And to be fair, we don't have better things yet. So we're still using it as the best option we have. But I think that speaks volumes that it's been like 60 years. And in very few cases do we have better options.
Well, Johnson and Masters, their study was more recent, wasn't it?
Yes, but also narrower, at least in my opinion. Kinsey was very specifically dealing with much more LGBTQ stuff. Again, because of the not at all random samples that he was required to get.
Well, I mean, you can...
So many lurking variables.
Right, but you can forgive him a little because... You know, right or wrong, it was unexplored territory, and he didn't really know.
And it was of enormous benefit, and it suggested things that we now think are more likely to be true that hadn't even been brought into the conversation at the time. It's huge. The Beatles broke all sorts of standards with their music. It doesn't mean I like it now.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Kinsey,
or that, you know, is the most musically ambitious or anything.
Yeah, those studies were mentioned and critiqued. I mean, all the stuff you're saying. Johnson and Masters, same thing. But I mean, like, even sociobiology and evolutionary psychology were talked about, but critiqued and discredited by the author.
But critiqued.
So, and I was encouraged by that. I mean, I also didn't know why bring it up at all, but. You know, at least it was sort of put in its place a little bit. But then after that.
Never underestimate the power of deconstruction as an excuse, as an alternative to having an opinion.
Right.
If you show enough stuff and point out how it's wrong, you don't ever have to explain what you think.
Yeah. I mean,
that was at least 3 of the 4 years I was in my getting my degree was that.
Do you think that tendency you just talked about would prevent people from moving forward in talking about certain things or learning certain things that because they just don't even want to make definite statements about these types of things? They want to leave
very them. Possibly. And a lot of people are looking for that piece of dot matrix paper out of this. I think there are fewer than you want to believe students who are like, I'm doing well in this class, but I don't really feel like I'm learning the things that are most going to be helpful in my career. I should do something about
it. Well, I don't know.
They're like, that's a problem for credential tone.
Yeah, I guess. Anyway. Yeah, I was just, I've just been disappointed.
It is a bummer, but over. I think it
is a bummer.
Sadly, maybe the state of affairs out there. And there are exceptions. You would need to go down a path of individual training that was specifically about sexual issues.
Well, and see, that's
sure
the
in
thing.
That context, you could find some real great coursework.
Probably.
You would have to pay money and time for a specialty that you're not necessarily interested in.
Correct. Well, I mean, I'm kind of interested. I've got a fellow student who is very much interested in these things. So she was.
Is this where we find out that you have fetishized advanced degrees?
No.
It explains a lot.
She was even more disappointed than I was because, I mean, I get the impression that she kind of would like to specialize in this area. But it's like you say, no matter how this course came out, or even if this course wasn't even offered, all of that other stuff is out there that she would have gone into and taken those certifications and stuff.
I don't know anything about being a therapist. I frankly think y'all are just narcissists who can't figure out how to entertain yourselves. But I do know something about fields of study as a concept. And there are plenty of occupations out there where you go and you get a real fancy degree and then you go out in the world and the people doing the job are like, that's cute. Let me now show you how this profession actually works.
Right. That is correct.
It's entirely possible therapy is one of those. Maybe the entire state of the industry of educating therapists like is known to be lacking in certain ways. And when you get out for your practical study, they're going to be like, yeah. We got some on-the-job trainings for you that's going to be real important because we know you were told some bullshit in those classes.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that is the case, actually.
Because I definitely know that happens in a lot of fields.
Well, yeah. And I mean, I've talked to my therapist about these very types of things. And she said, yeah, there's going to be some things that you learn.
She's like, this whole thing is a scam. Don't ruin it for the rest of us. I know you've got that podcast. Don't go telling tales.
Not exactly that, but in some respects, yeah, sure.
God
but
damn I mean, it, William, if you fucked this up for the whole group, it'll be like that Simpsons episode where they found out that truckers just had the auto navigator and they weren't even trying. It's going to be like that already.
They weren't even trying.
Yeah, they just had an auto drive function so they could like sleep or whatever. Homer has to do a thing and he discovers that there's this auto drive function and then he ruins it for everybody else. And so a big convoy goes to get him. Because he's going to expose the scam that is modern American trucking. That's you with
how do they
modern
come up
American
with this stuff?
Therapying.
Oh, well. It is what it is. So how was your week? We finally get around
Why do you ask?
Because you probably
it's
saw
something
movies
to do
and
with
stuff.
Sex?
No, it's not. Definitely not.
Phew. I've mostly been sick and sleeping a lot, not watching much worth mentioning, watching a lot of dumb stuff. My wife last night decided she was interested in religious horror, which I think was just anything that had a scary nun in it. I tried to find her an old Leo Fulci, but she didn't like that. So then she found a movie herself called the last thing Mary saw. And we watched that. I think it's fairly recent horror. I think it was on Shudder, so you could watch it through your thing.
Okay. But should I?
This is a problem for me. There is really a great resurgence of the horror genre of film in general right now. We, those of us who like horror cinema and what it can do, are really living in a new golden age in terms of just the amount of things and the amount of creativity given to it. And so there's lots of different varieties, and I have discussed at length my general issue between realistic horror versus supernatural horror. And if it's just a story about terrible things that people might actually and have actually done, I do not want to see it. If it's a thing about how a child's game made the devil take over my body and I murdered everyone, that's fine. That's totally fine. And I have made distinction for mental health that is so poorly portrayed, they might as well just be possessed by the devil, of which most slashers fall into. Not all of them, and the more they move along, less. And it consequently puts me in a situation where often better quality horror movies are not the ones I like because it feels too real, and I don't want the real horror. Well, this is starting to get muddied as time goes on because we have a lot of smaller versions of this. So now we've got, what if the movie has horrifying supernatural stuff, but it's all a metaphor? How do you feel about that? The Babadook is often held up as a prime example of this. I guess spoilers for it. The Babadook is a manifestation of loss and the trauma therein, and how it's not something that can be pushed away and hidden. You have to find a way to live with it. But in the movie, it's a big scary monster. But it's like very obviously a metaphor, and it's been talked about to death and all these things. So then am I okay with that? Because on the screen is big scary monster making stuff happen, but I know that this is supposed to be a perspective of a person actually going through these horrible things. How do I feel? It's mixed. And then, of course, there's horror movies nowadays that are like, here's a situation that happened, usually sometime in history. Wouldn't it suck to have lived then? Like, there's a lot of horror movies nowadays that are like, wouldn't it have sucked to be a woman in most any time in history? And I'm like, yeah, I don't know that I need a movie about that, but sure.
Aren't a lot of horror movies the monster and the a lot of the goings on metaphor? I mean, isn't that
yes? Part but of some the... of them are not as explicit.
Oh,
some oh, of I them see. Like there are horror movies that to this day people will argue about whether or not this is actually a metaphor for such and such.
I see what you're saying.
But then there are some that are like, yeah, that was not subtle at all. And there's great ones. Jacob's Wife definitely is about sort of the married female experience in a lot of ways and trying to deal with these impossible standards and wanting to break free from that. Ginger Snaps is about female puberty as evidenced by kissing dogs and wanting to make out with your sister. Sorry, not kissing dogs, killing dogs and wanting to make out with your sister. Anyway, some of them are more obvious than others. But yeah, it is very common. But we get into, and a lot of it is sort of modern folk horror, like the Vavitch, which everybody loves the Vavitch. I don't love the Vavitch. I think the Vavitch is probably a very good movie. I also refuse to call it the way other people call it because that's not how it's spelled. It's spelled Vavitch. But I don't enjoy it. I didn't like the experience. I could have gone without seeing it. And while it has supernatural elements and is a metaphor and all this, it's mostly just, yeah, if you are a woman who was at all not exactly like every other woman around you in pilgrim times, that sucked. And here's examples. And so I don't enjoy that. And so the last thing that Mary saw is largely a story about if you were the child of or the younger employee of some real puritanical people in the wilderness in the 19th century, it would suck if you were also gay. And the movie's like, and actually, maybe it's some evil supernatural or pagany thing that is making this happen. And the few things, options you would have won't work because of the evil. And I'm like, yeah, but you've gone to pretty good lengths to show that even without the evil, like, life just sucks for these people. Again, in a way that I totally believe happened many times in this era and arguably continues to happen in some ways now. So, nope. Like, I watched the whole thing. I think it's probably pretty good. It has that sort of dialogue where you're like, nobody's ever spoken that way. Was this a play first? It feels like a play. And I don't think it was, but everybody talks like that. Like, I'm not going to say it's a Shakespearean, but I would not be surprised to find out that literally everyone, and it's a huge spectrum of class, is speaking in iambic pentameter. Like, it has that vibe to it. Like, the scumbag beggar boy still is remarkably eloquent, like, in weird ways. So it might suck. I don't know. I feel like it also might be really good, and I just did not enjoy it at all. So... yeah, wah, wah. Also, we saw Synchronic on Netflix because Netflix has been trying to get me to watch the movie Synchronic for a long time. And then recently, other places in the internet have been like, you know, that movie is by Aaron Moorhead and the other guy, right? The ones who did Endless and their first movie that was actually related to the story of Endless. Endless is where they go back to a cult that they were raised in, and it turns out there's time loops and weird aliens and stuff. It's a really good movie. These are two guys that have been making, they've kind of been coming to their own now, and they're making really cool, really mind-bendy horror, like very slow burn, like weird shit is happening, and it involves a real loose understanding of quantum physics and shit like that. But they're really cool and compelling. And I was very excited. I watched this movie, and no, this movie was not very good at all.
That's too bad.
Yeah, I was disappointed. And it also caused me to yell at the screen, yep, that's what killed my dad. Somebody in the movie has a special tumor that makes them have special magic powers when related to this drug, like children do. You don't want to know. But they do mention at one point, they're like, it is a glioblastoma, so they are definitely terminal. And I was like, yep. Yes, they are. That's what caught my dad. He didn't get no special powers. To be fair, he wasn't doing any secret designer drugs. And he wasn't Anthony Mackie, which I feel like in a lot of these movies is an important aspect.
Yeah, probably.
It helps to be Anthony Mackie.
Yeah, it does.
He is... Anthony Mackie is not a bad actor. Anthony Mackie feels like he's running from something. He just will be in everything. And there are people like that. There are your Christopher Walkens. There are your Eric Robertses who just enjoy the pastime and enjoy the money. So they will be in anything. I don't feel that from him. Maybe it's because he seems too young to have that attitude. But I'm like, he's in Marvel shit. He's also in one third of every Netflix original film they make now. And sometimes he tries and sometimes he doesn't. A lot of times he doesn't. I don't know what's going on with him.
Maybe he's just running from not working.
Yeah.
You never know when that's going to happen because you just don't know. Do you know what I mean? I mean, some people are working and working and then they're not. You never know when that's going to happen.
That's true. Well, especially in the entertainment business.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of which, I'm super pissed off. That's all. Good night, everyone. No. They are making a new Disney Haunted Mansion movie.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't piss me off. That's just same shit, different day, same Disney, whatever. It's got Owen Wilson in it. He's on the thumbnail for the trailer. Of course. Whatever. Fine. You know who it appears that the lead is? Fucking Lakeith Stanfield.
Mm.
Also, Tiffany Haddish is in this. Also, Danny DeVito's in this. Also, just a whole bunch of people, including actors I seriously respect, including, let me say it again, Lakeith motherfucking Stanfield.
And so why looks, do they show?
Because I don't, that racism is why.
Oh,
but, okay. And he's in it. Don't get me wrong. He's in it. Whatever. It looks, I might want to see it is what I'm saying. I'm not saying I'll go to a theater, but I'm saying if you told me there's going to be a new, I mean, there already is a Haunted Mansion movie on Disney Plus that I don't want to watch. But this one, I'm like, holy shit, this looks not terrible in ways that I'm very confused about. So a lot of black people in it, and it seems very clever and self-aware and interesting in a way that I'm not used to from Disney or from movies based on Disney rides or from specifically Disney Haunted Mansion stuff, because it's all sucked always. Except Cory Doctorow's first novel, which is good, but I think in no way specifically affiliated with Disney. So good book though. Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom. Highly recommend.
I'll probably see it in the theater.
I just the other day was thinking about it. I don't know if/when I'll go back to the theater.
Hmm.
I think it's another one of those things. I don't think I'm scared anymore about it. I mean, I go to restaurants, I go to grocery stores, whatever. I just don't give a shit. It's a lot of effort and money to get there. I haven't missed it. I didn't exactly do it a ton before, but I was always like, there's something special. But now it's been like 3 years and I'm like, I'm good.
Yeah, pretty much the only reason I'll go see something in the theater now is because I want to read reviews about it. I want to see what other people think of it, but I don't want it spoiled. So I'll go to the theater and watch it. See, but I don't go because I want to see it on a big screen or anything like that. I don't care about that anymore. I'm perfectly happy to watch it at home. But if I want to participate, or if I just want to see the conversation about it after it's out and I don't want spoilers, well, then I'll go see it in the theater.
That makes sense.
I'll watch all that stuff or read it, read or watch all that stuff.
I decided to risk it and I watched the pitch meeting for Quantumania.
Oh, you haven't seen that, huh?
No.
What? Because you'd have to go to the theater.
I didn't plan on seeing it until Disney Plus.
Yeah,
and then
right.
after That's Wakanda right. Forever, I'm like, I don't know that I ever need to bother. Maybe sometime I'll get high and watch it. I don't know. And I should have known, too, the pitch meeting didn't even have a spoiler warning because it wasn't very long, in fact. But basically, there's the good guys, and then they encounter some bad guys, and then eventually the good guys win. That's the plot. Spoilers. That's the plot of the third Ant-Man movie. I will say this, though. And I say this having not watched like any of them yet. But it appears this is what's happening. So, Jonathan Major is playing Kang the Conqueror. Who's a very famous Marvel villain in a lot of things. And it appears he's just the big bad for this whole phase of the MCU, but not the same one. It's just going to be different Kangs, because technically that's what the Loki guy was. So he was one, and now again the Ant-Man one. And so I love the idea of villains that aren't the same villain, but are all going to be played by Jonathan Major. I feel bad. He does a lot of stuff I don't want to see, I think he's amazing. I love him.
I heard he's really good in Creed 3. I realize that's probably not your kind of thing.
I saw the trailer for that, and I was like, well, shit. I still don't want to see Creed 3, but, like, I a little bit do, and before I didn't at all. Especially because also Michael B. Jordan's amazing.
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, I'm not going to see it because I don't – it's not my thing.
That's the thing, boxing. Eh? What? Yeah. No.
But I can understand. There are things I've seen that were not my thing, but – the actor, I really liked the actor or whatever, or the director maybe even. And I was like, I think I'll see that.
Because he's hot shit right now. So he's in, you can't watch a movie without Jonathan Major being in it.
He's been a lot of things. Yeah.
And they're not all the same. And that's what I like. I mean, my first thing was Lovecraft Country. Beautiful. Then I see him in something else, totally different character. Then I see him in a different, like totally different. And I had a whole series of, who is this guy? He's holy shit. That's Jonathan Major. And finally, I'm at the point now where like I can see him and know that's who it is immediately. But it took a while. And every time it was a shock because I'm like, this is nothing like what he played before. Like,
right.
That's he's right. Really doing some shit. Again, Lakeith Stanfield, similar. I'll follow Lakeith Stanfield just about anywhere. The only thing I've seen that I'm sorry I saw was Death Note. And that movie sucked for a variety of reasons, and Lakeith Stanfield could not have helped it. And to be fair, it was a little baby Lakeith. It was pre-Get Out Lakeith Stanfield. So, but I mean, since then, Get Out, of course. Sorry to Bother You, phenomenal film. For those of you who have not seen Sorry to Bother You, see that film. It's amazing. Bootsy Collins directed. It's great. Bootsy Collins, who worked with Fatboy Slim on that Weapon of Choice video.
Don't know what.
With Christopher Walken that I talked about that suddenly YouTube wanted me to watch.
Oh, sure.
I did a podcast with somebody about it.
Yeah, that guy. That guy you did the podcast with. I remember him. What an idiot.
That guy. He's obsessed with sex.
Yeah.
He got kicked out of his online courses because he kept talking about sex. And they're like, sir, this is geometry.
Same thing.
Yeah. What do you think conic sections really are? Come on. In both cases, we're talking about limits. So how bad do you think Williams class is? Go to the blog. MagicalTalkingHat.com.
It's probably just me. I probably shouldn't have said anything about it.
No, I had something in there that I wanted to get the people's take on. I can't remember what it was. It was good. Here's a good one. Most of you went to college. Did any of your colleges have a course on human sexuality? And how long ago was it? What kind of freaky pervert college did you go to? I went to Grinnell, which is the best freaky pervert college.
I mean, now that you mention it, I was a sociology major. There were no human sexuality courses in my department.
Yeah.
I mean, there was gender classes and things, you know.
Yeah, no. And we had that too. We had a whole... what you would call a minor in gender studies. We had a whole gender studies department. I took most of the courses. None of them were about that. I mean, sex found their way into a lot of them, but none of them were about human sexuality.
That's interesting. So at the University of Iowa, the psychology department, which was heavily behaviorist, and kind of like what you're saying, trying to be more of a hard science than a soft science. I kind of reject all that dichotomy. But anyway, I don't think they had anything of any kind. Like, you know, even a human sexuality class that was like this one, where it was all concerned with anatomy and STDs and things like that, but not any real human behavior. They didn't even have anything like that, as far as I know.
Modern academia will still teach that sex was invented in the mid 60s by Barry White.
I think the most you would talk about
in
sex
garage
was in literature classes and maybe some religion classes, but that's the most you would talk about sex. And
well, and even then, that's just like a fun symbolism. Like, guess what they're talking about there? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's right.
It doesn't say anything about sex. We can just tell you that's really about sex. Like, ooh. Education's yeah. the worst.
Well, no, wait. Sometimes you would talk about it in anthropology classes. Sometimes.
It definitely came up. Yeah. Although almost always because it was about gender roles.
Yeah, I guess.
Almost sometimes always because either the way sex operated in a given culture was very strongly tied to if you were male or female, or in some instances something else, or here's something very different to what we in Western society are used to, and here is the gender differences and why that is the case.
Yeah, right. Or we're telling you about this because it's weird. Don't think it's weird, but we wouldn't be telling you if we didn't think it was weird.
And that's the thing, too. Whenever we studied in a culture, it was, this is a thing that these people do.
Yeah.
And the implication was always, they have one or two things that they do, and literally everyone in their culture, that's the only sex they're interested in.
Right. Right.
Like, yeah, the closest you get is sworn virgins are a great one. Eastern European, I forget what country, but they still exist to this day. There is a society in which, and it was a bit determined by the time period and what the male-female ratio was, but a woman can decide to no longer be a woman. And she essentially takes on the role of a man within their society. And now can own property and can start a household and can learn a trade and can marry another woman. And they do that. And the surface veneer has nothing to do with sex. Like, there is not any real implication that the sworn virgin and her wife are having sex.
Mm.
It is the gender roles. And so it is very specifically this woman, and it sworn virgin is part of it. You're a virgin. You've never lain with a man. And then therefore you can take on the role of the man, and they still exist to this day. There are very few left and they are old as shit, but there are still a few left. And that was discussed as a fascinating gender role thing. And of course, me and most of the people I know are like, yeah, they totally weren't having sex. Yeah, I'm sure you marry somebody and you're just like, nah, she cooks good. Like, yeah, I'm sure that was it. But that's not what we wanted to discuss.
Mm.
I mean, hell, you got to remember, the speed of academia is not quick, and we are only a few decades out from homosexuality being a legit considered mental illness. Homosexuality, what is now broadly the tamest of abnormal sexual behaviors, because everybody's a little bit gay. Come on, let's be honest. Like, everybody all the time. And yet we are surprisingly recent to when that was considered a genuine mental illness.
Well, I also think I often overestimate, for example, bondage and BDSM and things like that. Even in spite of the popularity of things like 50 Shades of Grey, which is definitely a specific kind of thing. It doesn't speak to all of those different flavors, as that one gal likes to put it, which I think is a good way to put it. Even in spite of the popularity of that, it's still, you still hear people talk about it the same way they talked about it I mean, colloquially, like on the street, if you hear someone talking about it, it's still the way they talked about it 30 years ago. It's like, yeah. There's not really been any.
Or there are set jokes.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you make a joke about having a safe word, most people will get the joke enough that they could explain it.
Yeah.
But not that it really means anything to them.
But the thing about that though is there's all from a sociological standpoint, and maybe that's the problem here, is I come at everything from a sociological standpoint. Those interactions clearly have some interesting sociological and psychological things going on, but oftentimes what they're treated as, even by academics, is this superficial, it's just a kink. It's just a thing that this person, like, well, okay, but what does the kink involve really? Besides just that behavior. Yeah. I mean, what are the emotions? What are the thoughts?
And I don't think that's missing. I think the state of your chosen field being what it is, it's, how do you put this? With anything, you should understand this as a sociologist. You create rules, you create truisms, you create laws, you create things to make sense of this myriad bunch of unique individuals. Sure. And you are always going to have edge cases. And ideally, you get to where you can create laws and rules that have fewer and fewer edge cases. We're including everybody. Oh, now we're going to include this aspect of sexual orientation so that now a huge swath of people fall into the norm and there are fewer that are edge cases. Unfortunately, I think all the flavors you're talking about, with very few, very broad exceptions, in your field are still edge cases. And so the answer is, when you have a patient who is into bondage, you and that patient are maybe going to need to delve into what that means for them and what the implications are and how that can translate every single time. And your field is not at a point where we can prep you for the bondage case.
No, sure. And
there may be a bunch of them because it's not that unusual anymore.
Right, right. People. And actually, that should always be the case where I'm working with that person in there, because I shouldn't be having stereotypes or any kind of preconceived notions about this.
No, but the field can collect data. And I think sexuality is an area where the field has not collected a lot of data because it's still icky.
Well, I mean, sometimes they'll say, well, like this book did address that a little bit. Some things are not ethical, of course, but other things they don't think they can trust it when they ask people questions that they will give them honest answers. And I suppose that's still a thing that, you know, you even no matter how much you try to make it anonymous or make it safe. And now we've got technologies that we can maybe make it so people don't have to, that people are still maybe not, they're either going to over-report or under-report what's really going on. And I suppose that's a thing too. I shouldn't gloss over the research, like you're saying, when you're trying to collect data and do research, the research challenges to learning more about these things.
Well, and I think you could benefit just purely personally. I don't know that this would help you in your given profession. Look at all the weird sexual hangups about discussing sex just in our society. That when you stop and look at them, you're like, this is crazy. Like, we all think about and do a lot more than we say. Like, for some reason, there's still a lot of like don't ask, don't tell when it comes to human sexuality in weird ways in our society. And sometimes therapy breaks down those barriers. Sometimes therapy is, here's a place where we talk about stuff that our society is not comfortable with talking about other places. But sometimes it just is a reflection. Like, yeah, we don't know how to talk about it well here either. And I think that's the good therapist from the great therapist. You're not going to get that from whatever PragerU Phoenix Online bullshit you're getting that dot matrix diploma from. But
If you
I just keep adding to the mystique, but you as an individual have the capacity to do that. And I mean, I have talked with therapists about sex things that I was not comfortable talking about. I have talked about ones that I still get a strong impression they were not comfortable talking about, but it's largely gone very well, because in the few therapists I've had that were really bad at that stuff, I didn't talk to them about it. I was like, okay, yeah, this is not going to work. We won't talk to them about it. So I consider it a sign of maturity in my therapist. Like, are you okay with this? And yet, with my current therapist, I had a time period where I was worried to talk to her about sex or drugs, because in my head, somehow talking about that would make her uncomfortable and she would refer me to a different therapist, even though those are very common things to talk about with therapists. And it would be kind of bonkers if she felt that way. In retrospect, I do not know why I had this fear, but I had this fear. She was also a little surprised, but
I wonder if certain cultural prohibitions are sort of the backbone of all this. Like you said, drugs and sex. Well, drugs. Yeah. I mean, I don't think we moralize drug use quite the same way we do sex, but it is illegal. A lot of it,
I mean,
you know,
we do in a lot of ways. Yeah.
Yeah, we do in a lot of ways. So I wonder if as our legal system and our culture gets away from criminalizing certain sex and certain drugs, that people will stop feeling I don't know if they'll stop. I don't know how that works, I guess, but I think that's a part of it. Somehow.
Before that happens.
I part of it is so many things are illegal, you know.
I'm going to dance around this because I don't want to spoil things for people, but I want to talk about this. I will just say Becky Chambers continues to be my favorite author of all time. I was reading a book recently that is sort of post-apocalyptic. It's a book in which it's not set on Earth, but we don't really have an explanation for why. It's just on a different planet for some reason. But basically all the destroying of the environment that humans do was happening there too. They call it the factory age. And then eventually it stopped because all the robots and all the automated machines gained sentience. And humanity was like, oh shit, I guess we probably can't just make you our slaves now. So you can go do what you want to do. And they were all like, thanks, we're going to go live away from you all and figure out what we're going to do with our newly involved sentience. And meanwhile, humanity was like, shit, I guess we got to figure out how to like function with the planet and all of that. So it's a very, there's still a technology level, but it's much more subsistence society. And this all happened hundreds of years ago, so that's not what the story is about. But it's a very cool sort of model and a what if. I mean, I guess at this point it's becoming incredibly obvious what this is. The duology that Becky Chambers wrote called Monk and Robot, and it's this individual, they are actually gender neutral, who is a monk who works in a particular sect and decides they don't want to do that monk job anymore. They want to do a different one. So they go to do that. And in the process, they meet a robot, which nobody's seen a robot in hundreds of years, and they talk whatever. But the driving force of the main character is that they are not satisfied with what they are doing. And so they go try and find another thing, and they become really good at that, and they are still not satisfied. And so they're trying all these things, and they end up traveling with this robot. And it finally comes down to they're trying to figure out what they're meant to be doing, what their purpose is. And the robot is like, you guys are nuts. They're like, we have talked at great length about how you have learned to live with the rest of living things and to take what you need as a species, but not just dominate everything else. You are trying to match that you are not somehow greater than the other animals around you. And none of those animals have a purpose. That's not, you are the only creatures who think you need one. And in fact, you recognize it is not required, because when my people gain sentience, you are like, go do what your heart desires. You didn't tell us this was our purpose, and yet you're still convinced that somehow you're different.
Yeah.
And when that hit me, I was just like, holy shit. Like, that was a real mind explosion for me. And it helps because I am living such a lifestyle now that does not traditionally have value within our society. Mm. I am earning no money. I am contributing to society. I'm not volunteering a whole, I'm not doing any of the things. When I tell people like I have no job, there's a lot of things you can say in response that would make them lower their eyebrows and finally relax. I say like, yeah, I'm just unemployed and I'm just living that way. And they're like, oh, and you got to say something like, yeah, I write novels. Oh, okay. So you're an author. Yeah. I volunteer a lot. Oh, okay. So you're just doing that and things like that. And, oh, I'm old enough. I'm retired. Okay. That's fine. But up until then, they're just like, oh, don't work. Don't contribute at all. Interesting. nothing wrong with that, obviously, but how, what, huh? And I internalize some.
Mm.
There are times I mostly focus on me and I focus on my wife and we're both happy with it and what I'm doing and that's good and wonderful. But every once in a while I was like, yeah, who the fuck says you need to have a purpose? We made that up.
Yeah, we just made that up. I mean,
do what you want to do.
Right. I mean, that's that's something that I've always tried to focus on in my life is I what I'm doing is what I want to do.
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
not
yeah.
what I meant to do. Nobody told me to do it.
No, I think we can all agree therapy is definitely not what you were meant to do.
Like, no, but I mean, like, even because I grew up in a religious surrounding and community. So there was a lot of talk about, well, God wants you to do this or find out what God wants you to do. It's like, no, that's not how it is. You can do, you don't have a purpose. It's like you and I've talked about. The only meaning is the meaning we make. There's not some meaning out there that we have to figure out what it is and adopt it for ourselves. We make it. So if someone asks me what my purpose is, all I can tell them is what I want to do, what I want to achieve, not what I was born to do or something like that. That doesn't make any sense.
It is funny you mentioned the religious upbringing, though. I would say, I know plenty of people who were raised in religions that they never really liked. And once they were old enough to break away, they sort of did.
Mm.
Fine, whatever. We all have that with our parents in various forms. But I also know a lot of people who were devout and raised in a faith and then left it. And sometimes it's a gradual thing, but I know a lot of people who can like pinpoint the moment. And I will tell you, the vast majority of those stories are, so this really shitty thing was happening. And another member of my church assured me it was part of God's plan.
Plan, yeah.
And I was like, the hell? Like, either this is a shitty plan, God, or... Yeah, but I also had plans. Right. This doesn't seem like a good deal. Like, but like a version of that I have heard so many times.
And maybe that's
far and away the most common one where I hear somebody who is like, yeah. I liked the church and then I didn't like the church. It's almost always some shitty thing happened and somebody told me it was fake.
And maybe that's part of the reason why I never bought into that idea, because to me, it made sense that if I have freedom to do what I want, and to me, that was part of how it worked, is I can do whatever I want. Like I can believe in God. I don't have to believe in God, or I can believe in God and not like God. All these choices I have as part of my faith teaches that you have choices. You can choose to follow God or not, et cetera, et cetera. Well, it made sense to
like
me that
if, who doesn't believe in God, but likes it.
It made sense to me that if I had this freedom, one of the costs would be sometimes what I want to do doesn't work out. Or sometimes, you know, it means that not everything's going to go my way, or someone's going to want something different than what I want. And so we're going to live in a very complicated world. And I don't know, that makes sense to me. The idea that God has it all planned out and then you have to figure it out. And if you don't figure it out, you're doing something wrong. That's never made sense to me.
But I'm still as somebody who was not raised in religion, but was raised in the society, I still struggle with the idea of how long I will be remembered slash my influence will be felt after I die. I'm still one of those fuckers. And it doesn't matter. And it's not how anything works. But I still understand that whole thing where I'm like, what's my legacy?
Legacy.
And on a certain level, my legacy is nothing. And that's all bullshit. And just chill out. And eventually, you will be forgotten. No matter how long you're around, you will be forgotten. But also on another level, my legacy is in every interaction I have with anybody. And I didn't have children, but I have influenced a lot of people who have had children, and I have influenced a lot of children way more than the law is aware of. There's rules behind this, but I still have influenced. That came out way creepier. I apologize. Yeah, it was just going to be a fun bad influence on the children thing, and it became a pedo thing, and I didn't mean that at all.
No.
I apologize. No. I have a history, people. There are people who literally know me as Bad Uncle Tony, and it has nothing to do sex-wise or anything. I'm a poor influence on children.
Yes.
And I'm very proud of that fact.
And adults.
And that's poor my legacy, is ruining future generations.
And current generations.
Yeah.
And past generations a little bit.
So I apologize that one didn't land the way it meant. But my point is, I have a legacy, and it's exactly the same as everyone else's.
Yeah, pretty much.
And people who try and convince another one, maybe, I guess if you're Mozart, cool. But if you're not Mozart, I do not care that the library has your name on it. And I mean, in that, we will say that name a lot afterwards, but we won't know about you. We'll make shit up, or we won't care. I guess not a real thing. I guess the library itself is cool. I've influenced people to stop reading, so that's cool in its own way. I'm working on it with William. These textbooks are really helping out a lot.
Oh, gosh.
So
I've never really worried about legacy, and I've always been upset. Like,
which
a lot
is
of times
a little scary because you had kids. You should worry a little bit.
You know, there's a lot of media that says, oh, legacy, that's what drives humans. That's why they have kids. And that's why they do the things that, no, it's not. I not only have I never been really that concerned about legacy, but I don't remember growing up with anybody, adults around me, that seemed like they were concerned about that.
And I'll tell you this for nothing. And I'm not saying it's the case 100% of them. I'm not saying the converse here, but I am saying the most unhappy people I have ever met in my life all worked for family businesses.
That's been my experience as well.
It's again, not all. Well. I have known some very happy family businesses. They tended to have existed a lot less time than other ones, but all of the most miserable people I know in the world work for family businesses because it was assumed slash they were guilted into it.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had that experience too, unfortunately.
So legacy is bullshit. You just got to check the wrist and look at WWMD, which is still confusing because it sounds like weapons of mass. Weapons of mass destruction do? But no, what would mammals do? That's all we got to worry about. What would mammals do? When you were first talking about mammalian sex in your class, I was waiting for, like, and they don't even get into the fact that some people have a thing for lizards, or I thought that's where you were going to go. Like,
no, I was just
saying they're focused too much on furries and not enough on scalies and
that. See, that would be interesting. That would have been interesting if they talked about that. But no, it's just like everything in this book, you might as well be about cows or dogs or elephants. This isn't about
maybe
human
you
beings.
Could be a cow therapist. I bet you'd be good at that.
Oh gosh, I would totally be good at that. The cows would feel so much better after,
and so would the humans you didn't talk to,
right? The mental health of humans and cows would go up.
This is Iowa. Maybe that's your intern thing. They're like, first you get to talk to the cows and we're gonna listen in, And we'll jump in if we feel that you're taking the cows down the wrong path.
Yes, right. And we'll have group therapy.
Once you're there, we will work our way up to goats and pigs.
Up?
Yeah.
You think goats is up from cows? Maybe.
Yes, and then pigs. Sorry. Cows, pigs is up. Goat, human children, pigs, horse. Human adult, human teenager.
That's no, come on.
Human teenagers are the highest intelligence we have.
Well, the human teenagers will tell you that for sure.
That's where I learned it from. They educated me. I don't think I told you about this. This was probably a week ago. It's all in a haze of not feeling well, but I think about a week ago. Because, yeah, it would have been Thursday. So I was picking up the trash outside. So I come in, and down the block, walking along first, is a group of young women. I say that because I am not specified. Like, if you had told me they were high school kids, I would have bought it. If you had told me they were in their late 20s, coming off a shift from somewhere, I also would have bought it. Somewhere in there.
Okay.
They were young, in my opinion, but definitely like post-pubescent, as it were. But anyway, they are way down there. And one of them yells something, and I couldn't tell what it was, but it was definitely the yell of a young person who's trying to make their friends laugh by yelling something at a stranger. So I don't worry about it. But shortly after, I hear another yell directed at me from half a block away that was quite distinctive, in which they said, "Shake that ass, daddy." And I was wearing this exact nightshirt and my best hoodie over the top, and that was it, carrying in the trash. And my day was just made after that. I felt so good. And then there's no way that it was meant specifically for me or unironically or whatever, but I took it with me all day.
Okay.
Of course, good. I can't hear daddy now without thinking of Pedro Pascal.
Yeah, right. I know. That's
I've been watching some. He was on the Graham Norton show with Helen Mirren, and so they got to see him on there. He's so adorable. Oh, I'm really gonna hate it when it turns out he's murdered people or something. Like, whatever his shitty thing comes out, it's gonna be very
sad. Yeah, whatever
sad
it is,
I love
it. Is I know he's you're gonna so be really sweet. Sad when that happens.
Yeah, because he's so cute right now, and he's so. He's been in the industry for so long, but he still has this childlike wonder with which his star has finally risen.
Yeah, he's exuberant.
Lin-Manuel Miranda has a similar thing where, like, he's a success now, and it's not like he's brand new, but he's still just not used to the success, and it's just really cool to him.
Yeah, it's kind of contagious when he gets excited about something.
They were talking about how he's the internet's daddy right now, and he just thinks that's hilarious, and he's still trying to figure it out. And then he talked to him about how he learned the term swerve and what the young people said that means. And he's like, "Oh, is it like to avoid?" I was like, "No, it's somebody leans in for a kiss and you swerve them." And so then, as a demonstration, Helen Mirren says, "I'll do it." And he's like almost crying. He's like, "You can't, I won't swerve for you. I can't do that." And so she came in to kiss him, and he did swerve, but then he kissed her on the cheek and was like, kind of. And he's like, "I couldn't help it. I couldn't. You have to understand, I hold you in such high esteem. I would never swerve from a kiss you're trying to get." And like, he genuinely like seemed flustered by the whole thing. It was so cute. And he's just such a sweet guy. And hot. Not gonna lie.
Well, he's a good actor anyway.
He's good at acting. Go to the blog. You've got to have more interesting things to say about this than we do. We want to hear about it. We want to talk with you about it. We're a great team here. You all and us. We do the dumb part and you do the selfless part. And that's always how it has worked from the beginning of time. We are your teenage children and you are our long-suffering parents. So tell us how we can do better as children in the blog, magicaltalkinghat.com. Also,
how we can do better, so then we'll go ahead and not do it.
Yeah, if you got one of those passive-aggressive parent things, like, if you ever manage to find the floor of your bedroom, maybe, like, that kind of shit, you know? What do you think of a child who doesn't say that? Like, email those to us, and we'll see through your bullshit, but we'll still talk about it, because Magic Hat. Yeah, so go there. Go to YouTube. Hang out with Maggie. She's all alone over there. She's the only one who sees the cool special effects we do. And Ezzy. And there's a real whole additional story if you're watching the YouTubes. There's a lot going on. But mostly just come back next week, because it's going to be the closest we'll get to our 12th anniversary.
Yep. Right, the day before.
So then we're going to head into lucky podcast year 13.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.